Humanity in healthcare is seeing and being seen, and hearing and being heard, and healing and being healed.
More human healthcare means I know what matters to my patients, not just what's the matter with them.
And more human healthcare means extending kindness, compassion and fair treatment, regardless of my faith, nationality and race. Remembering that underneath it all, we're all human.
More human healthcare means remembering everyone involved is human.
As staff, it would mean the umbrella of safety and compassion is extended to me. As a patient, it would mean not to be unfavorably cared for because of who I am.
More human healthcare means a warm and listening face, an attitude of respect, and an honest and open response.
Humanized healthcare for me is more than just dressing my wounds. It's holding my hand, looking into my eyes, asking how I feel. It's checking that I'm not scared, treating me like a human being.
Healthcare more human, both for people working to deliver care and for people they care for, is the mission of the Point of Care Foundation. To do that, in our winter series, we want to share some of the reality of working in healthcare from different perspectives across the NHS and social care. These voices from the point of care are an important counterbalance to some of the rhetoric that's flying around the press, with healthcare staff represented as heroes and sometimes villains, when in reality we're all just humans who have good and bad days. We think it's important to share some of the joy of the work of health and care, the bits that get you up in the morning, whether they're the colleagues, the tributes, or simply the patients and the impact you have on their lives. But it's also important to understand some of the realities of working in healthcare and the toll it takes, as well as the great bits that really get you up in the morning. So I'm joined today by Martin Marshall, who is the chair of the Royal College of General Practitioners and who's also a practicing GP in Newham, East London. His Twitter profile says that he's passionate about general practice and about doing outdoor things. So you're very welcome, Martin. It's really nice to see you. Thank you for coming today.
Great pleasure to join you. Thank you.
So I wonder, I've got a few questions for you, and I just wondered if you could tell me a little bit about your role, both at the college and as a general practitioner. What's a typical day or a week like, if there is such a thing?
Yeah, so I'm a GP. I've been a GP for over 30 years, working in three practices. I spent kind of the first third of my year working in Devon, the second third in Moss Side in Manchester, and now I'm a GP in Newham in East London. I only do a small amount of clinical practice now, less than a day a week, because of my role as chair of the Royal College of General Practitioners. So rather than talk about my clinical work, I might talk about my chair role, if I may, for now, but always happy, indeed delighted to come back to talking about being a GP as well, because that's my identity. That's a bit that really kind of excites me. I've been chair of the college for 2 years. It's a three-year fixed term. There isn't such a thing as a normal day as chair of the college, which is one of the things that's so exciting about the role. I must say that I've got a short attention span. I like variety. So not knowing what's next is something that really pleases me. An average day at the college, if there is such a thing, my role as chair of the college is to act as spokesperson for general practice. That's the kind of the lead voice to policymakers, to partners, to the media, to the public as well. So every day I'll be talking to ministers, to policymakers, to our partners in other Royal Colleges or in NHS Confed or NHS providers, a whole range of other partners that we speak to, talking about specific programmes of work or maybe talking about more general issues about where general practice is and where it's going. I spend quite a lot of time doing media work on broadcast media, written media as well. That's an important part of raising the profile of general practice. Some of the problems that we are experiencing in general practice, particularly around workload at the moment, are ones that need to be highlighted in the media so the public know about them and so that policymakers know about them as well. I spend a lot of time talking to members, visiting their practices, visiting different parts of the country, speaking at seminars, speaking at conferences, which is exciting as well. And we do quite a lot of work with patient bodies as well, particularly the national patient charities, working with them in order to get, if you like, a kind of mutual understanding of where general practice is and where it could go in the future. So very varied day, no day's ever the same. And it's a challenging job, but a really enjoyable one too.
You alluded to it in what you said when I was about sort of relationship and talking about what it's like being a leader just now. And so I'd like to know a bit more about that, because as I said in the introduction, at the moment we go from clapping in the street to blaming everybody for everything that isn't quite right. You know, the media particularly takes a lead on that. So what's it like being a leader in the college just now? And what are the particular pressures and what are the particular issues that you're challenged by?
Yeah, well, I have to say, being a leader in the current environment is quite a challenge. And some of my friends say to me, gosh, you are unlucky in choosing this particular period. I don't kind of feel that way. You just have to accept whatever environment you get elected into. But to have to deal with two massive crises in my tenure is a big challenge. So the first crisis is the pandemic, of course, the biggest pandemic the world's seen in 100 years. And the impact that's had on the NHS, on society in general, has been massive. So dealing with that as a leader has been a challenge. The second crisis is a slower burn one, but one that's coming to a head, which is the workload crisis in general practice. If I just kind of characterise that very simply, when I started as a GP partner in 1990 in Devon, on a busy day, I might see 20, 22 patients. Now on a busy day, I'll see 50 or 60 patients. And it's very, very difficult to provide the quality of care that patients want and expect, quite rightly, and the quality of care that I'm trained as a GP to provide when you've got that volume of people to look after. And the problem is simply a supply-demand one. You know, the need and the demand for primary care services, for general practice services, is growing on a weekly, monthly basis. And the supply, the size of the workforce in particular, both GPs and other health professionals working primary care, is not growing in an appropriate way. Indeed, the number of full-time equivalent GPs is actually dropping, despite that being a manifesto commitment from the government. So those are the two kind of crises that we're dealing with, and it is a big challenge being a leader. I think, you know, part of my job is to provide a sense of hope, a sense of optimism, which is sometimes difficult, getting that balance right between recognizing the realities of how difficult it is being a GP in the current environment, but at the same time giving that sense of hope, that sense of optimism. I think my job is to provide a vision of where general practice is, not to pretend that general practice is great, because it isn't great at the moment, but to convey the importance of general practice becoming great again in the future. That's really important, because that gives people a sense of kind of energy and commitment and passion to work for the future. And I guess I spend quite a lot of my time just kind of trying to maintain and further build morale. You know, the morale of our workforce in general practice across the board, but particularly amongst GPs, which is my primary interest in our college, is really low. Probably the lowest, certainly the lowest that I've ever seen in my career. Maybe even as low as it was in the 1960s, when a massive new charter was required in order to rejuvenate general practice. Feels to me like we're getting back to that place again now. So it's been challenging, but and this is a big but, I think. I know it's so often said, but I mean it. A time of crisis is a time of opportunity. It's an opportunity to engage people with radical change and radical thinking in a way that doesn't happen when people are feeling comfortable. And that's something that we need to seize as leaders.
I'm really interested. I know you know that one of the things that the Point of Care Foundation's particularly interested in is staff well-being, because we know that apart from just being the right thing to do to look after the people who are working for the NHS, it's also in a direct relationship with the service and the care that patients and service users receive. I wondered about what the college's view is of how best to look after the well-being of GPs and members, especially this year in the pandemic when it's been so pressured.
Yeah, it's so important, isn't it? I think it's been it's easy sometimes to say the low morale, the lack of well-being amongst our members and amongst primary care staff in general is a consequence of undoable workload. And therefore, the only way of addressing well-being is to improve workload in some way or other, which, of course, is not very helpful, because that's a medium and longer term challenge that we have, increasing the size of the workforce, for example. So I think there has to be ways in which we work with our members to improve their well-being right now. And the kind of ways that we're doing are ways we're working. We've got a range of resources to support members, particularly members in crisis, with mentorship schemes, with practitioner health program, for example, but also helping members with a whole range of things just to make the working day a bit easier. Some of the very practical things about reducing workload and prioritization, some of them more about personal well-being, around mindfulness techniques, for example, de-stressing techniques. Everybody has their own approach. You know, personally, I find exercise really important as a way of maintaining my well-being. I find switching off as best I can with the help of my wife and family and friends, who are very grounding, all of them. None of them are impressed by my position in the college. All of them see their job as keeping my feet on the ground, and that's great. That's really important. So I think there's a range of ways in which I personally try to maintain my well-being, but I think our role as a college in building the well-being of our members is fundamentally important, because this is a time to use every resource we have in order to keep going, with the expectation, the hope and the expectation that things will get better in the future.
I guess your role in the college is also important, in that, you know, your relationship with policymakers and the media attempts to sort of address some of the rhetoric and the slightly unbalanced reporting that goes around, isn't it? That the sort of GP bashing that's going on in the media at the moment isn't very helpful, I would have thought, to GP well-being and keeping people going.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. It's been a really tough time, and quite an unusual time in some ways, because, you know, we know that GPs have for a long time and continue to be amongst the most trusted of professionals in society. I think for a short time in the last couple of years, nurses took over from general practitioners, but now GPs are back at the top of the public trust ratings that we see periodically. And that's happening at the same time as we're seeing a high level of criticism from certain branches of the media. Now, you know, what we need to do as a college is differentiate between which of those criticisms are actually reasonable criticisms, i.e. we're not able to provide the quality of care that we wanted to for our patients because of workload pressures, and which are unreasonable criticisms, particularly given that those unreasonable criticisms are making the problem worse. You know, if you're down, if you're feeling demoralised, if you're working incredibly hard, and then you get a criticism for not seeing a patient face-to-face when they don't need a face-to-face appointment, for example, the most likely thing that you do is abreact. You probably start working part-time or you retire early, which makes the crisis even worse. So our job is very much to defend general practice, but to do so in a positive and optimistic way. So we will push back on the Daily Mail and Daily Telegraph stories when they have no basis whatsoever. But actually, we will say that some of the criticisms that are coming our way are understandable ones, and they're ones that government need to address.
Yeah, for sure. I also think it's really important. I've been really struck doing this podcast series about the levels of optimism and positivity. I mean, there are some horrendous challenges over the last 2 years, but I'm really, you know, it's still a vocation working in health, isn't it? It's still, you know, the purpose is what gets people up in the morning. And so I'm really, you know, I think it's really important that we touch on some of the best things about working in health. And this could be either the college or your clinical work. And the things that give you real joy in your job, and what's gets you to really jump out of bed in the morning.
So I think you're spot on. I think alongside the low morale and the fatigue that we're seeing, we're also seeing remarkable examples of professionalism, and indeed a lot of people still really enjoying their job. And I find it really interesting. I can talk to the same person, and if I talk about policy or government or resources, I have a very negative conversation. If I talk about the last patient that they saw, it's a really positive conversation. So the same people are reflecting different kind of approaches toward life. And part of our job as a professional body is to try to keep the conversation in as positive a way as possible to maintain people's interest and morale. What gets me out of bed in the morning is a really interesting question, a slightly fun question, I must say, because years ago when I worked in government, I remember having a conversation with a guy who was chief exec of a multinational, very engaged outside healthcare, or at the margins of healthcare, but very engaged and very positive about what he was doing. And I said to him, what gets you out of bed in the morning? And he said, every morning, 6 days a week, at 6 o'clock in the morning, I get into my office and on my desk are the sale figures for the previous 24 hours of the product he was selling. And I said slightly, ironically, slightly tongue-in-cheek, but only slightly, I said, well, I'm working in government and every morning I get into my office at 6 o'clock in the morning, and what motivates me are the Daily Mail headlines from the previous 24 hours. Now, you know, I was joking, because of course we have important motivations, but there is something about the extent to which negative things can drive you in a most unhelpful way. You know, what gives me a buzz as a clinician is every single patient that I see. You know, I'm fascinated by the human condition. I'm fascinated by what people can cope with, most remarkably, and what they can't cope with, what they bring to their GP and what they don't bring to their GP. I think it's an incredibly privileged role where you hear things that other people just don't hear, even people's loved ones don't hear. And sometimes you can make a really big difference to people's lives by a very small intervention. So general practice is the most fascinating and rewarding of jobs to do. We just need to keep on reminding ourselves of that. And also remind ourselves of the reality that it's less fascinating when you're on your 55th patient of the day than you are when you're on your fifth patient of the day.
Yeah, that's a wonderful reflection of the job, isn't it? You know, that the fascination. And I think it's mirrored a bit in when you talk to patients and the public about the health service, because if you ask people a general question about what's the state of the health services, you know, there is some reflection of some of those newspaper headlines. But if you ask people what it was like the last time they saw a doctor or saw a nurse, it's usually unfailingly positive, isn't it? It's almost a mirror of what you're saying, really.
Yes.
Just a couple of more things from me, Martin. I think you've touched on the things that are most that trouble you most. So the thing I would like to finish on, well, two things really. First one being, if you could give one message to the general public about the NHS just now, if you were going to be writing the front page of the Daily Mail, what would it be? What would you want the public to understand about general practice?
Well, I might not do it through the mail, but I think there's one important message, and it's not an easy message, and I'm not sure how best to convey it. But there's something about the need for a conversation with the public about how healthcare in general, particularly general practice, is changing. And it's changing quite dramatically. I think many patients still have the view that general practice is about a GP, it's about their doctor, and they want to see their doctor face to face for whatever problems that they have. And the reality is that the world is changing in general practice as it is in so many other sectors in life. So first of all, general practice is a team activity now, and you're actually more likely to see a physio or a nurse or a pharmacist or a mental health worker than you are to see a doctor in general practice now. The figures are about 45% of all consultations are now delivered by doctors and 55% by other health professionals. So there's something about helping patients to understand the benefits of that, because what you've got is a new set of skills and an amazing set of skills that we're bringing to the primary care team. So I think that's important. General practice is multidisciplinary, and you will see different people. The other issue is you'll see them in different ways as well. So the hot debate at the moment is face-to-face against remote consulting. I think that's been played up for political reasons. The reality is that we know there are a lot of patients who like remote care because it's convenient. And the other reality is face-to-face care is really important for those who need it. So the reality, I think, in a year's time is that we'll reach a steady state in which practices, in consultation with their patients, most importantly, will decide, will accept that there are different modes of accessing care, And sometimes that'll be on the telephone, sometimes it'll be by video, sometimes it'll be face-to-face, sometimes it'll be text-based. And our job as professionals working with our patients is to make sure that the best, most appropriate method of access is used. And that's a conversation that I think we need to have away from the heat of, I want a face-to-face appointment. We just need to have a legitimate conversation about, you know, what is safest, what is best, what is most patient-centered, what is most convenient, what's most efficient. Those are the conversations that we need to have.
Yeah, thanks, Martin. And last thing I'd like to ask, which is probably a harder one, but probably something that you're very familiar with answering. If you could ask the Secretary of State to grant you one wish, what would it be? And you can't have three more wishes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, but I will still two wishes. I'm sorry. So my first wish is a larger workforce. It really is as simple as that. You know, I know we have to work differently, and we are working differently. We have to change the nature of demand and expectations of health services. We're doing that as well. But fundamentally, we don't have enough health professionals of all sorts working in general practice in order to deliver the quality of care that we need. So that message, we need more GPs, we need more other health professionals in order to be able to deliver the quality of care that we need to deliver to our patients, is my number one ask. And my second ask is a general message actually to politicians and to policymakers, which is to understand that general practice is primarily about relationships. I'm a much more effective clinician when I know the patient who's in front of me and I've built some kind of mutual understanding and mutual trust. General practice isn't, for most cases, a series of technical transactions. And I want policymakers to understand that, because they don't understand it at the moment. They tend to see it as a series of technical transactions, and that's why they don't get the complexity of what we do.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, the whole of healthcare is relationship based, and that is fundamental to the work that we're trying to do at the foundation. Martin, thank you so much. I know you're busy and you've spent half an hour with me this morning, and I'm really, really grateful. So thank you so much for that. For our listeners, I want to let them know that we've been talking to Martin Marshall, who's the chair of the Royal College of GPs and a practicing GP. If you'd like to know more about the Point of Care Foundation and our mission to humanise healthcare, you can visit us at pointofcarefoundation.org.uk or at Point of Care Foundation on Twitter. Thank you for listening to this Point of Care podcast. I hope you like what you heard. And we'll look out for our next episode on humanising healthcare. Until then, this is me, Bev Fitzsimons, saying thank you and goodbye.